Hello and welcome to the Smart Beauty Podcast. I'm your host, Viola Levy, beauty journalist and founder of copy-led branding agency, Smart Beauty Creative. We're here to create your brand voice and craft the story behind it. Hello everyone. Today I'm speaking with the wonderful Lizzie Ostrom, better known by her stage persona, or former stage persona, should I say, Odette Toilette. Now, I met Lizzie through her many events that she held around 15 or so years ago, where she really helped change the way we experience fragrance away from the traditional beauty counter and really brought it mainstream. And I think now people love going to events. People love going out and having a purpose to their, you know, to their day out or their evening out, and learning something new. She really spearheaded that with what she did with her events under the name Odette Toilette. The thing I loved about the events is that she really made fragrance come alive. I love the way she talks about fragrance, and she would link it to popular culture, film history, wine, food, you name it. It would, each event would have a different topic, and you learned something about the history of perfume. She also has written a number of books on the subject, which I'll include links to in the show notes as well. But yeah, I think she's a really cool person. And she is a friend. As I say, I have known her a number of years, but she is a fountain of knowledge. And today she works as a consultant and writer, not just in the fragrance world. And we talk about how she was nervous about leaving that world and finding her identity outside of fragrance, which was a really interesting talking point, as well as leveraging her outsider status and making it work for her. I think that there's something to be said for that, leaning into what makes you different, which I talk about a lot, and Lizzie is a perfect example of that. And yeah, I love the way that she is non-elitist about fragrance. She democratizes it. I think a lot of people are very worthy, especially in the beauty industry, I'm sorry to say, when they talk about scent as if you need some kind of academic expertise in order to talk about it with any conviction, whereas Lizzie is more about having fun. She knows a lot about fragrance, but she also knows how to have fun with it and encourages other people to do the same, which I am all for. I hope you enjoy the chat as much as we did. Let's dive in. So Lizzie, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. It is such a pleasure to have you on the show, as we've known each other for a number of years. So yes, really lovely to be chatting with you today.
Oh, thanks, Viola. I'm really excited to be on here. And actually, given how long we've known each other, find it quite sort of moving to be doing this. Yeah.
So you've carved out a really unique space as Odette Toilette, which is how I came to know about you. And I came to many of your lovely events over the years. I mean, how did that whole journey begin? Because I think it was, I think you were one of the first people to really make perfume an event and kind of combine the worlds of fragrance and events so well. What was the story behind that?
Oh, well, I was actually reflecting on this earlier, and I started in 2010, so 15 years ago, and in a way, it's only now I can really make sense of it, because I can kind of see what was happening at the time and what were the different things that kind of came together to make that happen. So a bit of sort of potted what I was up to at the time. I had a background in communications. I was in PR. I originally worked in restaurants and food, so not kind of too far away from fragrance, but quite distinct. Mm. So alongside all this, I loved fragrance. I'd always been really interested in perfume. I used to save up my pocket money to buy perfume. The other thing you should probably know is my dad was like obsessed with the internet and new tech. I mean, he still is. He sends me like all this AI filmmaking he does. He's retired now, but he's like super into his tech. So I was online really young. I was online from like the age of 11 and 12. And alongside like chat rooms that I probably shouldn't have been in, I used to read
about... We were in the same chat rooms, I think.
We were in the chat rooms.
Go dial up.
And so from like, I don't know, the age of 12, I was in these forums reading about perfume and I was loving it. I was just, and I guess I remember when Makeup Alley started, just all these old websites that were largely around beauty, but had these fragrance communities. So this all, these weird mix of things, I think just sort of like came together in this weird recipe where I just thought, hang on a minute, where can you go to do the perfume thing offline? And how could it be really fun? How could it be really relaxed? Just sort of, yeah, available to anyone who might not even really like perfume, or but get brought there by someone they're on a date with. And so it was very much, that's basically it. That's how it happened.
And I think it's just great because I think people at the time that you started, people were moving away from that whole buying perfume at a beauty counter experience because it's not for everyone. And it's a lot of people think it's a very intimidating way to buy perfume, but there weren't any other ways to really engage with the world of perfume. And the events thing just sounds like a no-brainer when you talk about it now.
Yeah, again, no brainer. And it's so interesting because that very formal style of selling that was around, like very ritualized and sort of like, you know, madam and sir and da da da. Like I remember at the time I started thinking like, oh, this is sort of time to feel skin crawling. And like, we're all sort of doing this conversation, but everyone's feeling it's a bit awkward. And also that, like, how do you do the, oh, I'm not quite ready to buy conversation. I find like shopping conversations excruciate. Like, I just, bring me out in. Yeah. But I, in my original events, I used to partner with a fragrance shop, Le Senteur, which is still going. And it was a very classical perfume boutique. But it was also, because it was family owned, there was something kind of idiosyncratic about it.
I feel like storytelling in fragrance, there's so much more that can be done. I think the way that we talk about fragrance in the mainstream kind of industry, I think is, there are so many missed opportunities. I mean, do you think that what you were doing as Odette Toilette and with these events, you're kind of helping people to look at fragrance and the way we talk about fragrance in perhaps a different way, rather than this will make you smell irresistible or all of that kind of nonsense that we've been fed growing up?
Like, yeah, which is kind of where we're back now, right? In a lot of places it's back to that. Yeah, I like to, I would hope so. That's what I was trying to do, is to make connections, just make connections, some of which were really fruitful, some of which might not be, but just to see where those connections are. So I used to do events that were about scent and music, scent and film, cinema, archetypes, psychology, you know, like any subject where I thought there might be any kind of link, I'd go, all right, let's try this out. And I'd often bring in a speaker from the other field or someone to co-host from the other field. We'd workshop stuff. It was very experimental, and I suppose what I think the events did is they were sort of a cauldron, and people would come along, and it was just a space where quite raw ideas, emerging new ideas, you could kind of get acquainted with them. And then I hope, and I think this was the case, that people would go away and do really interesting things of their own accord. And, you know, I wasn't there to sort of own it. I was there hopefully to act as that first sort of light switch. And then, you know, other things hopefully would follow from there.
Because the perfume world, it's historically been kind of shrouded in secrecy and elitism, and people are very intimidated by it. And I think that's why you get the same perfumes that top the Christmas charts every year, like year after year. It's Chanel No. 5, and I love that fragrance, but it's like sort of the Beatles' Yellow Submarine. Imagine that staying at number one every year. It's just bizarre. I think people kind of branch out and have fun with perfumes. I think people are scared of getting it wrong, or not being clever enough or knowledgeable enough to engage with it. And I think what your events did so well was to just help people not take it seriously. Like, it's not that deep. Just have fun with fragrance and it can be whatever you want it to be.
Yeah, totally. It's not that deep. It can, it's, you, yeah, it doesn't have to be this heavy, heavy subject. Also, just finding your own taste, right? Like what you really like. It's a bit like, you know, with all the wine education that's happened in the last 20 years. Like if you like your New Zealand Sauvignon, great. You know, like that's what you like. And just knowing, most of the time I'm into this, but I'll go over there and try that. You know, like what's your sort of territory you're willing to explore, and how extreme do you want to go with your scent or not? Maybe some of the time, maybe all of the time. It's kind of, it's an exploration, and it does not have to be serious.
For sure. You put together this incredible exhibition at Somerset House on perfumery. I would love to hear a bit more about what that was like. I went along to it and it was just brilliant. And I think it helped people to kind of see fragrance, to start to see fragrance in a different way rather than just, oh, that smells nice. It really put it into a different abstract artistic realm, which I think was brilliant. I mean, what was the story behind that?
Thanks, Viola. Yeah, so that came about. I think I was hot desking Somerset House, which is a big 18th century, oh God, this is where I get it wrong, building in London with links to kind of the Admiralty, and it's now a cultural centre. But it's sort of a bit, it's not like the V&A where it's kind of known for a certain sort of identity or aesthetic. It's kind of quite, it shape shifts a bit in its programming. And Claire Catterall, who I work with on the exhibition, so we co-curated it, I think she'd been sort of mulling over for a long time doing a perfume exhibition. And the thing about these things is they can take years. They really are like slow. It's sort of like you kind of really have to build up a head of steam. It takes a long time to get buy-in from everyone internally and kind of make something happen. But she approached me because she knew what I was up to, and I was like, oh my God, yes, I will gladly work on this. It was definitely the highlight of my career in fragrance. I think, you know, the team there was so great, so interesting. Rosie Warneck, who's now at another exhibitions company, was kind of a producer on it, and she was brilliant. We were a really great team, and I think the thing that exhibition achieved was this sense of sort of space and peace to get into fragrance. So whereas my events had been kind of quite high energy, I think that the perfume exhibition, it was quite pared back, and it was totally to sort of get you just really relaxed and receptive, because that's when you let your guard, just coming back to kind of fragrance feeling closed off and like, oh, I don't know what I'm smelling. You just sort of take it down a level, just chill out, and then you're fine.
I just remember there were like pendulums suspended
Yeah.
with scent in some, I'm not describing it very well, but that's what really sticks out to me because I just thought they were so cool.
Oh, yeah, we had different rooms. So there was a room per fragrance, and there was very simple set design from an organization called Muff, great name. And
Brilliant.
they did, like, they designed the furniture basically. So it was really simple. You had these wooden floors, beautiful light coming in through these huge bay windows. And then there might just be like a chaise lounge with, like you could just lie down and smell. I think it was a Prada scent. And in another room, it was like a billiards table with balls that you could smell. That was for a Comme des Garçons. And it was very much about just different ways of being in a space. So some of them you were kind of on your own, some of them you might be standing with other people. And so it was kind of about, I guess, the social role of scent part, like very subtly. The official thing was about like celebrating modern contemporary perfume and what it could do, what it could be.
And how was it working with all the brands for that? Was it quite easy to get their buy-in?
It was, this is where I have to speak really carefully. Some of them were a dream. There were some conversations we had earlier on, which were interesting. There's obviously like it. You could never predict who was going to be easy to work with and who wasn't, but like on the whole, they were all absolutely delightful. But I think it was, you know, it was a it could be a challenge because you're asking them to hand over their scent and for you to do something with it and do a creative interpretation. And I think that's a big ask. But you know what? Loads of them really got on board. I remember it was a real, we worked with Daniela Andrea from Givaudan, and she was so trusting and really got it, just really got it. Lynn Harris as well. I remember like some of the perfumers I never met, and but they came and didn't say they were going and then wrote a really nice message. That was really special. The biggest challenge is I had a baby a few months before it started. And like I literally was like, yeah, like, so when my daughter was 2 months old, I had her in a meeting. And I'm not saying that in any sort of Sheryl Sandberg-y way of like just get back, but just how I just have really like they're kind of nice memories, but of like being in a meeting with her asleep and then having to find somewhere to change a nappy, and also kind of not really obviously being very sleep deprived and not knowing if I was making any sense, but then actually. It was like I, you know, even in your most the darkest moments, it's amazing how you can just carry it on sometimes.
Yeah, that old survival instinct kicks in. It's just
yeah, really weird. So yeah, I think that was the biggest spanner in the works. But then that it will always, you know, that's life, right? So
no, exactly. Just
go around it.
Yeah, you find a way. You find a way of making it work.
I just had a delayed maternity leave. Basically, it was like just a few months later.
That's even more incredible then, even more laudable. And it's interesting. Like, do you think that there's going to be like more scent exhibitions in that way? Because I think you are like one of the first to do it. And it's a shame because I haven't really seen that many sort of crop up since. But I'd like to think that it started sort of something that people would think, oh, actually that's a really good idea, we should do more of those.
Yeah, and I think it is growing. If you look at the Eau d'Europa project, there's a lot going on in the kind of building capacity in the cultural sector to do it. Obviously brands and retailers are doing pop-up exhibitions. I think one of the challenges has been in my experience that if it's not embedded from the start, it can get lost, because that you do need to put quite a lot of planning in behind it. And for obvious reasons, people who work in conservation or in like facilities management, if they hear scent and they're like, no, it's gonna destroy the painting, or it'll eat the fabric, or, you know, which is totally fair enough. Mm. But I think educating and working with people behind the scenes at museums and galleries is an important part of building it.
And as well as your events that you've done, you're also a really beautiful writer. And I love your book where you talk about the classics and you delve into the history of scent. I mean, what is it about the history that you love so much?
Oh, God. I think it's just the fact that once you start looking into it, everything's been done, right? Like, there's been so much inventiveness, so many interesting people and pioneers, and so many of them are forgotten now because they weren't the ones that have gone down in the annals. Like, obviously Gabrielle Chanel, her story's very well protected, but there are so many other people who didn't, they don't have a legacy in the same way. And I just loved finding those people, and it just sort of, it gave, obviously scent gives the past texture because it's so visceral, so it was partly about really feeling the past and sometimes being able to smell it. You know, there are perfumes we can go back to, but yeah, just these interesting people who tried out all this stuff, whether it was in retail or formulating or, you know, entrepreneurs, and they've just done it all, and so in a way it's all just there to rediscover and try again, I think.
And it's interesting how scent, more than any other beauty product, I feel like all these blockbuster classics, they capture that essence of the time that, you know, the context, the era in which they were created. So obviously like Nina Ricci, Le Duton is the best example, I think, of that. But there's something about scent that really kind of captures a mood or like a public feeling, I think, more than any other beauty product.
Absolutely. And it's really nice when I was just thinking about the 90s and how obviously CK1 was the one that everyone talks about, but I was thinking about like Lolita Lempicka scents and how, now that 90s aesthetics are being reappraised and codified a bit more, especially on social media.
Makes me feel very old.
Yeah.
Remember it the
Oh
first
my
time.
God. Yeah.
Quite
It's
grand,
yeah,
wasn't
it's just appalling when I think, oh dear, this Y2K is now like a revival. Or even the 2010s is now a revival, which
Oh,
feels
that's
it's just ridiculous. But yeah, just you only see them again with the distance of time, really, and you kind of suddenly go, oh, that's what that was about. Oh, and yeah, I love that. And I going back and just going, what was that? And that's why we were all wearing that one. We just didn't know it at the time. Yeah, super interesting.
What sense were you rocking in the 90s, out of interest?
So I was very into Boots Global Collection, which was a sort of counter, it was a bit like the Natural Collection. So these were body sprays that were like you could buy them on a Saturday. So I used to spend a lot of time in Boots, these sort of quite obscure bits of the Boots aisles in some instances. I bought Exclamation because I like the bottle, but I didn't like wearing it. Obviously, like Anaïs was an obsession. I then got into, oh, what was the one that, I really wanted to like sunflowers. I was obsessed with wanting to like it. I don't know why. Why did I want sunflowers? And then it was like so thick, it was sort of like syrupy. But I just wanted it. And like that's, I do think with fragrance that you like, we make ourselves fall in love with stuff against, it's a bit like dating, right? Like, you can make a relationship work in fragrance, even if you think, oh, I actually don't really like this, but you just will yourself to love it. And I
That
did
shoe
that
is
a
going
lot.
to fit. I'm going to
Yeah,
step on foot elsewhere.
exactly. Yeah, like you just sort of persuade yourself into these situations, and then it's fine. You can kind of sustain it, right? Like I also really loved Gucci Envy. I was very excited by having a green perfume. I liked the idea of being a bitch. I wanted to be a bitch for a while. Bought Gucci Envy and it would make my teeth shudder because it was so sharp. But I was like, no, I'm into Gucci Envy. This is happening.
And I love that you sing about body spray. And I think you mentioned Impulse O2 in your book, as I recall. And I love that because I was obsessed with that fragrance. That was what I would wear to like netball practice. And I think body spray is a lot for a lot of us. That's our first kind of encounter with the world of scent because it's what we can afford, like a £2 can of body spray as opposed to Chanel number 5 or whatever.
And now, because we're both in the industry, we know how much time and money goes into making those fragrances, probably, more so than something at the kind of high end in a lot of instances, because they have to be like market tested to the nth degree and focus groups and revised again and again. So they're often really great scents. I loved O2 so much.
Same. I heard a rumor that they were bringing it back, but then that just to death. But I was
Oh.
so gutted because, yeah, if they brought that back, I think it will do so well. And Impulse Spice as well, the Spice Girls one.
Yeah, the Spice Girl. I remember the can.
And I've got a segment that I do on this show, but I've started doing it, sort of the personal milestones or challenges that people have overcome throughout the course of their career. Do you feel like you learned any kind of major life lessons from all the things, all the amazing things that you've done because you've had such a cool and varied career? I mean, was there anything that stood out to you?
So the value of being an outsider is, it was definitely one I learned. The value for you, and also the financial value of being an outsider, because that is, I think brands find that to be sort of exciting and energizing, and the trick is how to then monetize that. And I think sometimes I did that well and sometimes I didn't. That was something. And then the other thing is that I didn't realize sometimes my value was not in fragrance. It was outside the fragrance industry, and I didn't realize that until, I don't know, later on.
You elaborate a bit on that. Like, how did you feel that? Did you feel like your value was only tied if you like left it? What would you be without it, sort of thing?
Yeah, I think it was re so I do still work in fragrance, but now I also work outside of it, and it took a long time to sort of work out how to break ties because I was scared of leaving it or doing different things. Like, it's sort of like, would I lose my place? And the answer is, like, I did lose my place, but that's fine and that needs to happen and it's natural.
I think there's this pressure, I don't know if you agree, to be good at one thing, to find something you love and think, right, I'm going to be really good at this and this is going to be my like sole focus for the rest of my life. And now I think we're all coming to realize that no, you can have you can be multidisciplinary. You can have lots of different and you don't have to make one thing like your lifelong life's purpose, your basic reason for existing. You can be lots of things, and it doesn't mean that you're kind of diluting yourself or that you're any less talented or, what you're doing is less worthy.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's interesting because one of the areas I'm working a bit more in, sort of education and public engagement in other scientific stuff at the moment. I'm not a scientist, I should say, but just as I took this, I guess with scent, it was an underexplored subject and I looked at ways of making it more accessible. I'm doing that with other subjects now. And sometimes if I'm sort of explaining my background to researchers or people in, I don't know, very different industry, I sometimes think, like, if they see 15 or like at least 10 years in the fragrance industry, they're going to be like, what the hell? Like, how does this relate? So I do always have that pressure of, like, how do I make sense of my story? But I think a lot of that pressure comes with me, and like, people don't give a shit really, is
No,
what I've learned. They
they've got their own
actually
stuff
don't.
going on.
They've got their own stuff going on. They're not going to sit there and interrogate your official paragraph about yourself.
I mean, speaking of that, I've always struggled with public speaking, and that's something I've admired about you with your events. And you always seem like a very confident hostess and presenter. Did that always come naturally to you, or was that something that you had to cultivate in the beginning?
Oh my God, I loved it. I was such a little stage show-off at school. Oh dear. Yes, but then it's so interesting. I think it must be, I don't know, I just think some of it is totally potluck. Because, for example, I remember when I did piano at school, I literally couldn't keep it together playing the piano in front of one person. I still wouldn't. I would lick, my hands would shake. And there's no rationale behind that. Like, why can I do public speaking but not do that? And I don't know. I don't, I, for some reason, I've just always found, I find it quite soothing to be in a room. I don't generally script it, so I'll do a sort of points I need to get across, but I like to ad lib. And to me, the act of ad libbing actually is really pressureless because I sort of, all I have to do is speak aloud my thoughts and formulate them with people in the room. And I know that will all work out. Whereas if I think if I had to do auto cue, I would be really stressed
You
about
both
getting it
emotionally
right.
engaged.
Yeah, and I think it's just like each of us have our wild psychology and background that shapes what we thrive in and what we find terrifying. And I don't know why I'm okay with public speaking.
Yeah, I mean it's not something that comes easy to everyone. And I think for me, like my mind just goes blank. I think the nerves get to me, and then it's like, well, my brain's like, well, I've got nothing. You're just having to rely on a script because, yeah, even formulating a sentence from a bullet point, I just find that too much of a leap for my nervous system in that kind of situation. So it's
Yeah,
quite.
and totally fine. And like, some people can do a pitch, they can't to 100, but they can't sit around a board table. I mean, I find boardrooms terrifying. Oh my God, so scary.
Yeah, they're not the coziest of places, I guess. So, what's next on the horizon for you? And
Oh, great question. So at the moment I'm doing, like, having been very much out there when I was running my events, I don't do events anymore, which is fine. I feel like that's sort of a period that's over. So I do a lot more behind the scenes consulting, much further up the at the earlier stages. So if I was sort of end of the funnel before at the kind of events, I'm much more further up in the research space now. And I do a lot of cultural insights consulting for brands. A lot of them are larger brands in drugstores, so not fine fragrance, and maybe like $10 or £10. And it's a lot of the work is the repositioning them. And I really enjoy researching cultural movements and thinking about how you get into the flow of those or find your place in there. So that's really fun, and I work with some really interesting people on that. And then yeah, I'm really enjoying, like, at the moment my obsession is actually kind of difficult conversations. I'm really interested in, as someone who's so diplomatic and conflict averse, this is way out of fragrance, but may have some relevance. I just think we find it really scary a lot of the time to have difficult
Oh my God,
conversations.
especially in female friendships. I've been just thinking about this, that I don't know about you, but a lot of my female friends, I find it so difficult. It's basically just boundaries and management. That's that kind of, or I'll just won't, or like I'll just take a step back and hope they get the message. But confrontation is like, oh my God, you just worry that that's going to kill the friendship dead. Some friendships, and I'm sorry to say this, but I think female friendships especially, it's just they're so delicate. And then once you cut through the pleasantries, you just wonder if it's got legs to like survive.
So true. It's like one argument and you're done. Absolutely
Yeah.
right.
Like, do I want to risk the friendship? Is it worth rolling the dice to have this argument?
So I think it's in friendship, I think, what's going on in global events affecting how people are with each other at work. It's a really difficult time. I've been looking at kind of boycotts of different events that are happening. I'm not going to kind of go into details, but basically there's a lot of kind of difficult conflict about, and I'm really interested in how that plays out in conversations between people. And I'm learning a lot about that at the moment. So that I don't know where that's going to take me, but it's just my latest sort of passion.
And finally, before I let you go, I mean, if somebody gave you, here's loads of money, go and create a perfume brand, like what would you do differently to what's already out there?
Oh, you know what I would do? I'd split the funding between 10 people who are just interesting people. They don't have to be in the industry. They'd be from a really broad range of life experiences and perspectives, and they would be able to brief a fragrance.
It's one fragrance each. They don't all create together. It's like they each get a
Yeah, they'd get one each. They'd get to control their own brief, and I think it would be even better if they had nothing to do with the industry. And see what they come back with.
Yeah. It's the whole thing about democratizing fragrance, isn't it? And making it a bit more accessible, and just because it should be for everyone,
It
definitely.
did. Having said that, the other version is I recreate. I mean, Beaulieu have done this, but like the Court of Versailles, I basically build a palace, fill the rooms with fragrance.
Oh, love it.
Have load of like parties, have Marie Antoinette sheep sprayed wearing scented
Amazing.
bows. That's what I'd really
Imagined.
want to do. The extremes, there we go.
Well, this is why I like you so much. It's like I love the way you think. Well, thank you so much, Lizzie, for joining me. And just to correct something that you previously said, I think you definitely are special. It's been, yeah, just a pleasure to follow your career and to chat to you. And yeah, really exciting to see what you get up to next.
Oh, thanks so much, Father. That was such a lovely conversation. It was really great to be here.
I hope you enjoyed that episode. All links will be in the show notes, and feel free to visit smartbeautycreative.com
or visit us over on Instagram to find out more about what we do. And if you enjoyed listening, please don't forget to rate and review Smart Beauty on iTunes, as it helps people find us. See you next time.